You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 4th of November 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One. I'm Andrew Muller. Coming up,
49%, almost half the electorate, has said that the new email thing made them less likely to vote for Hillary.
I feel all fired up and ready to go for the next 5 days.
We're going to be the smart country again very soon.
If you disrespect women before you take office, you'll disrespect women when you're in office.
We have always elected a decent human being. I don't care where the politics are. And right. Hillary is tremendously flawed. This is a man who makes fun of disabled people, something you wouldn't let a 9-year-old do.
Only a few more days to go. Hang in there. But seriously, how is a contest between a hyper-qualified successor to a popular president and an obnoxious orange Yahoo still even a contest? My guests Tom Edwards, Danny Giacopelli and Liam Aldous will be here to discuss that and the day's other big stories, including the increasing colonization of public discourse by conspiracy theory, the collective fit pitched by Britain's newspapers following yesterday's High Court judgment on Brexit, and the Chicago Cubs' inadvertent demonstration of the virtues of old-school print photography. That's all coming up on Midori House on Monocle 24 right now. And welcome to Midori House. My guests today are Monocle 24's executive producer Tom Edwards, Monocle's Madrid correspondent Liam Aldous, and Monocle 24 producer Daniel Giacopelli. Welcome all. And we are on the eve, hopefully, of the last weekend during which we will be obliged to utter the phrases Donald Trump and President of the United States in the same breath. Except to say, do you remember that time Donald Trump ran for President of the United States? Ah ha ha ha. Oh God. But the question, with all due acknowledgement that it has been asked once or twice before, remains. How did it come to this? The US has an improving economy, falling unemployment, a popular Democratic president. How is this still a contest? Danny, speaking on behalf of all 330 million of your fellow compatriots, really, I
blame the media.
Well, obviously.
Just like Trump.
The mainstream media.
Obviously. But the fact that this, it's risible.
Yeah, I think we just need to, we all just need to take a big breath and wait until Tuesday. I mean, I know we have a show. We have a show to fill here.
That's a very long breath to take, Danny. If any viewers listening, don't try to hold your breath literally until Tuesday.
How did it happen? I think it happened from socioeconomic forces. You're smiling. Andrew, nobody knows how the hell this happened. I mean, angst, loss of jobs, even though, as we know, actually jobs were created in
161,000 in October,
but perceived job loss. It doesn't really matter what the facts are. It matters what you feel. The internet, actually. I've been reading a lot about how just the echo chamber of the internet these days, people thought that it would make democracy perfect. It's actually made democracy much more flawed because it's an echo chamber. People don't listen to the news sources they don't like. Yada, yada, yada. And here we are. The reality show generation.
So in some yada, yada, yada.
It worked for Seinfeld.
Tom, 2 weeks ago, the Democrats were talking airily about flipping Texas. Why has the latest eruption of an apparent non-story about Hillary Clinton's email server made this difference?
I think Danny was kind of talking around the issue, and that it's this question of perception. There's clearly a disillusionment in the US with the entire political spectrum, right and left, and even on the centre. There don't seem to be that many people who are left there anymore. And we see this around the world. I mean, we'll talk later about the Brexit hoo-ha that's continuing in this country. It's the same issue, and I think the problem is that there's the perception and the reality have become increasingly divorced from one another, and we've got a situation, and the media is partly to blame for this, where the anti-facts have a primacy. We talked before about the anti-intellectualism, the fact that so-called experts, I don't need them. Now it doesn't matter what the reality says. It doesn't matter what the statistics tell people. You can tell them that they're better off than they've ever been, that they live longer than they've ever been, that more people have jobs than they had one or two political terms ago. It doesn't matter. There's a perception that they're in crisis, that they're disenfranchised, that they're not being listened to. And that's how you get where you are today. And I think that even explains why the race in the States is narrowing, because people are confronted by two candidates. They don't like either of them. And rather than making a rational choice based on what's best for the country, they are being increasingly influenced by this idea that you need to be disruptive and you need to change everything. We did it in this country with Brexit.
It's going well so far.
We've cut off the nose to spite our face. And frankly, it looks like it could happen in the US. I almost can't believe that I'm saying it, but it's been heading this way.
I just want to pick up one thing on the media thing. Obviously, I'm not blaming all the media, but one thing about the media is the disproportional emphasis the media has put on Clinton scandals as opposed to Trump scandals, which you really can't compare. But I was reading Matt Iglesias in Vox. He said the TV coverage this cycle, in aggregate, spent more airtime on Clinton's email scandal than on all policy matters combined. I mean, that is just...
Policy's a very 20th century preoccupation. Done.
Yeah. But, I mean, once you have a fact like that, it all makes sense.
Do you think it's because they're looking to balance out the coverage, so they have to find some scandal with Clinton? That's the only really big scandal, so they have to balance it out?
Well, it's that whole thing, fair and balanced. You have to give 50% of, you know, airtime to each one, even though, you know, 50% of the policies and the arguments are rubbish.
Liam, while we're blaming the media, how much should we be factoring in the likelihood or possibility that it's in the media's interest to flam this up as a massively close contest? They did this in 2012 and in 2008, of course, both of which Barack Obama won fairly handily.
Well, I also think that maybe they're hamming it up because polls have just become increasingly unreliable with all kinds of votes, not just with the Brexit, but even if you look at the last UK elections, they were quite way off. And even in the Spanish elections, I can bring a bit of Spanish flavour to this discussion, the polls were way off. It's because a lot of people stayed at home in the second round of elections and gave Prime Minister Rajoy, who is completely covered in scandal, his party won the most votes out of all four parties. And it wasn't because there was a lack of choice. There were four parties contesting the elections and he still won, which just goes to show that facts don't matter. People were scared. A huge scenario of the sky will come crashing down was thrown into Spanish voters' faces. And in the end, they chose the safe option, which was a bad option, but it was apparently the safe option.
It's interesting. I've spoken to a couple of colleagues recently. I was talking to Fernando about Brazil. Anti-politics is winning. That's who people are voting for. They either don't turn up at all because apathy wins the day, or they vote for very small C conservative, you know, so-called safe options. People aren't interested in policy. They're only interested in this sort of reactionary nonsense. I don't blame the media. I'm not quite sure what's to blame. I get tired when people constantly say, oh, it's all the fault of the media. You know, that does not explain why this is happening and why it's happening everywhere.
One quick thing. Also, you have to be careful. Is it just a Trump thing or is it the new normal? I mean, when Trump goes away, if he goes away, he might win. But if he goes away, is this the new politics or is this Trump just like a one-off and we'll never see the likes of him again?
Well, we can only hope. Before we move on to some not unrelated subjects, I'm going to go quickly round the table. It's your last chance. I want you, one, to tell me what you're doing on election night, and two, I want you to call it. Who's going to win and by how much? Danny?
I'll be in Lisbon for Web Summit, so I'll be at a dinner with a bunch of startup people, and then I'll go home to my hotel and watch the news. I have a really bad feeling about that, and I'm not going to announce what that means, but I think my guy won't win. And by guy, I mean person. And by person, I mean lady.
Liam.
I'll be packing my bags, getting ready to...
The optimistic approach, then.
Getting ready to move to a far-flung Canary Island and set up a refuge of like-minded people and create my own echo chamber away from...
You and the rest of the Trump supporters are going to go together.
No, not at all. But I'm in London, so actually, I just arrived. I don't have any plans, so I'm looking for invitations.
Well, somebody's got to go with the numbers. Let's go for it. Hillary's going to win by a couple. Trump can't win enough of the key swing states, and everything can settle down a bit.
You have such wishful thinking all the time, Tom.
Somebody must give voice, and I'll give voice to that
as well. I will be here, I think, for quite a lot of the night, and I'm calling it for Clinton, 313 to 225.
What are the odds on that? Are you have money on that?
I will have money on that, dag nabbit. But anyway, on a not unrelated subject, while no election campaign ever fought has cleaved rigorously to the truth, much of this presidential election campaign, like much of this summer's EU referendum here in the UK was contested in a weird parallel universe in which reality was whatever any given voter, or more commonly, any given Yahoo with a Twitter account decided it was. What happens, however, if or when the tinfoil-hatted legions of conspiracy theorists become a significant cohort? Is democracy itself threatened? Or, Tom Edwards, I put it to you, as Diamond Joe Quimby, mayor of Springfield, once asked, are these morons getting dumber or just louder?
I think they're getting dumber and louder. I have to say, you know, I've been shocked by so much that's happened in this country, going right back to June 23rd. The newspapers today are so staggeringly ill-judged.
We shall be getting onto those later on.
I don't know. Look, I'm rendered speechless. I don't know what to say. Yeah, I mean, it's as bad. This is as bad a sort of political moment that I can remember in my lifetime. And bear in mind, I can remember lots of stuff that's happened all through the 80s and beyond. But
not because you're old, Tom.
This is as bad as it gets.
The LA Times here, they have a good article on it. They interview this guy, Michael Canella, from Staten Island, and I'm allowed to make fun of Staten Island because I'm a neighbor of his.
Go ahead. Any Staten Islanders listening, this is Daniel Giacopelli speaking. That's G-I... Anyway.
Yeah, he says if Hillary wins, her ascent... And basically, they frame it as this is a good guy, normal guy, family guy, you know, yada yada. Again. Her ascent to power, if she wins, will have been engineered by Obama, the news media, and the Muslim Brotherhood.
Obviously.
Whatever that means. A group of powerful bankers, which I assume he means Jewish people.
Those guys.
Which he calls the oligarchy, may also be involved. It's almost diabolical. So it's just complete fringe, you know, opinions there. But he says, basically... It's the whole thing's rigged, but the guy walking around the streets could be, you know, your neighbor, and he's a nice guy. He's not a tinfoil hat guy in a bunker. It's just the conspiracy theories have kind of infected the day-to-day living of American...
What if the conspiracy theories are true?
Well, don't you start.
Well, that's I'm saying this because in Spain just last week, the recently toppled opposition leader, Pedro Sanchez, gave a very high-profile interview saying... Pretty much that, minus the Muslim Brotherhood, that he was not able to form government with the Podemos party because he was told by some very high up people in the El País newspaper that if he formed a government with Podemos, they would go against him and oppose it from day one.
But that's not really a conspiracy theory, that's just politics.
No, he said that the reason the paper did that is because they're owned by bankers and...
Here it says, we could just solve this right now by asking Tyler. It says here, surveys show close to half of media moguls may pick the election's winner. Why don't we just ask Tyler if he's in some shady room picking the winners of
maybe
the election?
Clearly, that's not true.
in a room full of cigar-smoking old men.
I mean, it's complete insanity. It's insanity.
Tom, how do you combat it, though? Because the trouble is, I don't know if you've ever tried to argue with your conspirazoid type, but obviously as soon as you argue against them, you have revealed yourself to be part of it. Mm.
Well, there is that ridiculous circularity. I think the point Liam makes is interesting, but I think you need to make a distinction between conspiracy theories and an actual conspiracy. Now, I don't want to give too much, comment directly on the allegations around El País, but clearly there's quite a lot of murk there. And, you know, there are lots of very powerful people who seek to manipulate the outcomes of business decisions or political decisions to their own ends. We shouldn't be surprised about that. We should try and counteract it. There are conspiracies. There are people who have, ulterior motives and they seek to influence where they should not. That's not to say that, you know, all decisions are tainted in that way. And again, I know we'll come onto this in this country in a minute, but, you know, oftentimes... things work fairly well and the wheels of democracy turn maybe too slow or too fast for some people's liking. But we've reached a point now where even when things work, even reputable people in the press or in politics will twist that into being, a conspiracy theory. I don't know what can be done about that, just ignoring them.
Isn't the problem the amount of people that believe it, though? I mean, the problem in Spain is that the majority of the population believe what Pedro Sanchez is saying because they know that El País had a huge crisis. It got into the real estate game, the real estate bubble burst, and the banks and the big corporations are now backing the paper.
We need some good news politicians. And this is the broader point. All of these crises are linked to the fact that there's a crisis in the political class. There aren't people with the charisma, with the conviction even, to convince those doubters, some of whom may have a legitimate point, that all is not as bad as it seems. And we could be waiting a generation for that to change.
Danny, again speaking on behalf of all 330 million of your compatriots, this line of thinking is not new in American politics. It goes back to that famous Harper's essay by, I think, Professor Hofstadter, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, talking about McCarthyism, the John Birch Society, you know, people who believe that Eisenhower was working for the KGB. This has always existed. But has it been empowered by social media in particular to a level at which it's actually dangerous? Because we're now getting beyond a point at which we can chuckle at people who think the moon landings were a hoax or that whatever they want to think about John F. Kennedy. Is this actually a threat to democracy? If a candidate, say, not dissimilar to Trump, but more less appalling than Trump, one who doesn't sort of affront women and black people and gay people and Latinos as chronically as Trump does, appears and makes and taps into the same force.
Well, that's the thing. That's the point there. It's not actually a right-wing thing, conspiracy theories. It's across all political spectrums. And it's very easy to convince people things that you want to convince them. In the LA Times here, they have this stat, these two political scientists basically went out and they made up a fact, and 11% of the people agreed with them. They said this theory they made up that fluorescent light bulbs is a government plot to make Americans more obedient. They just made it up on the spot. And
finally, someone's articulating my worries.
11% said, yeah, of course it is. I mean, it's just...
And 28% didn't know and abstained from answering.
Yeah. But again, it has nothing to do with right wing or left wing.
What percentage didn't actually understand what the word fluorescent meant? Or have you considered, Danny, that this might be a double bluff?
Perhaps. That's what they want you to think.
This is what big fluorescence wants us to think. On that thought, we are going to take a short break. You're listening to Midori House with me, Andrew Muller, along with Tom Edwards, Danny Jacopelli, and Liam Aldous. Coming up next, those portions of Britain's press which campaigned most noisily for the primacy of British courts and Britain's Parliament go absolutely swivel-eyed, foaming at the mouth, steaming at the ears, loopy when a British court upholds the sovereignty of Britain's Parliament.
Ever since Justin Trudeau became Prime Minister, Canada has been in the spotlight. And that's just one of the reasons why we dispatched our team north for the November issue, to look at everything from diplomacy to architecture, power players to good food. Here's what our editors have lined up for you this month.
In design, we venture into Canada's great outdoors. From the rugged coastline of Nova Scotia to the lakes of Ontario, we meet a cast of architects designing handsome homes that work with the wilderness to form a unique structural language.
In the edit section, we highlight the hidden delights of starting a home in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and dig into the growing food scene in Prince Edward County, Ontario.
The November issue of Monocle is on newsstands now. Or get yourself a subscription. Visit monocle.com to join the team.
Can you smell that popcorn? Well, while you're waiting in line, let me tell you about some of the standout guests we've spoken to recently on The Cinema Show. This year's Palme d'Or winner Ken Loach told us how going back to basics was integral to the strength of his winning film, I, Daniel Blake.
Paul wrote two characters which have quite simple, straightforward situations.
Fellow Palme d'Or winners Jean-Pierre and Luc Dardenne told us how reaching the heights of the film industry can have its downside.
Because after Cannes, the reactions were mixed. Some good, some less good.
And Canadian filmmaker Xavier Dolan gave me a glimpse into his creative process.
What matters in making movies is all the elements are working and walking at once in synchronicity.
So now you've heard the trailer, all you need is the main attraction. Tune in to The Cinema Show on Monocle 24 every Friday at 20:00 in London. Or download the podcast now. You'd better hurry with that popcorn though. The movie's about to start.
Yeah. You're listening to Midori House with me, Andrew Muller. Still with me are Tom Edwards, Liam Aldous and Daniel Giacopelli. Yesterday, you may have read Britain's High Court ruled that Britain's Parliament must be consulted before Britain's government begins formally egressing the UK from the EU. If, however, you read this in one of Britain's Conservative newspapers, you may well be listening to this broadcast in the shelter you have improvised in your cellar, surrounded by sandbags and stockpiles of tin beans and shotgun shells. The coverage has not been noteworthy for its equanimity. Tom, you have an array of absolutely howling at the moon balmy front pages spread out in front of you there. Which one's your favourite?
Oh, I think I have to say that the little red but often and rightly derided Daily Express
has knocked it out of the park.
It's got poppies. We've got a fluttering Union Jack. We must get out of the EU. And for me, the case cracker, the comment piece suggests that we are facing a crisis as grave as anything, Andrew, anything since the dark days when Churchill vowed we would fight them on the beaches. Yes, the Blitz, the horror of National Socialism. I'll throw the Holocaust in there for good measure. Anything as bad as that we face now when a selection of judges in the High Court in this country did precisely what the Daily Express and all the other foaming mouth lunatics were asking, which was
their job,
the primacy of Parliament and the rule of law in this country, the laws made by our Parliament for our voting public. The sort of roundabout absurdity of this exceeds anything that, you know, Lewis Carroll would have come up with. I literally cannot believe the front pages today. It looks like a spoof.
There are some especially good ones. The Sun has gone with "Who do you," spelt EU. You see what they've done there, think you are. The loaded foreign elite they're talking about defy the will of the British voters. They have printed helpfully a photo of Gina Miller, who bought the suit, and have pointed out three paragraphs down that she was born in Guyana. So that's not so much...
She's a bit foreign-looking, Andrew.
That's not so much the racist dog whistle as racist symphony orchestra accompanied by cannons and fireworks. And the Daily Mail has printed photos, helpfully, of the three judges with
Can
the
I read the captions?
Please do. Enemies of the people is the headline.
Here they are. One's The Fencer. He's a fencer. The other one worked with Tony Blair.
They did helpfully inform readers yesterday that the fencer was openly gay.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that matters.
The openly gay ex-Olympic fencer. And the Europhile, that's kind of the labels they're throwing down at them as if it's like the worst thing in the world.
All jokes aside,
fencing.
Liam, it is a matter of months since a British MP was murdered by somebody indulging in not dissimilar rhetoric. Does it get to a point where this kind of nonsense is actually dangerous?
Definitely. I think, I have the privileged position of watching all of this from afar, from my post in Madrid. And just, it's kind of like, I described it today as like a disaster story that has been hogging the front pages for months. And it just doesn't go away. Usually a disaster story gets overtaken by other stories, but this is still the main story, and it just gets worse. And maybe this is a sign of what all of you in this room have to expect for the next few months and years as this goes ahead, like a crazy roller coaster that's going to go off its tracks.
Something to look forward to. The once relatively sensible Telegraph has gone with the headline, "The Judges versus the People." And what they've done here is that they again have helpfully printed photos of the three of them, but they've bleached them. Well, not really bleached them, but they've sort of printed them in a sort of like portentous bluey grey.
There's a sinister blue tint added.
You know what it looks like in the Jason Bourne films when he's like in the Target or something like that.
Well, they could have gone further. They could have drawn like little horns on top of their wigs, or perhaps fangs coming out of their mouths.
But the more striking thing on the Telegraph, again, there's a leader written by Nigel Farage, which is headlined, "Voters aren't going to let this incredible arrogance lie," which
this
paraphrases the
Nigel Farage complaining about other people's incredible arrogance.
His lunatic ravings. And again, we have to come back to the point. And that's why I actually disagree with Liam. I don't think this is dangerous. I think you need to let people fulminate and come out with this lunacy so that the holes in it are there for all to see, for right-minded people to see. You know, these are not incredibly arrogant people. They're doing precisely what Farage and his ilk urged them to do, and they were quite explicit about that as well in their judgment. It's staggering.
And the Tories were the ones who wanted the Parliament to be consulted in any referenda.
Yeah, it's...
They were the ones who, a couple of years ago, said the Parliament must be consulted. I mean, it's like...
Do we think the people actually writing this nonsense believe any of it?
Well, Nigel Farage probably does, but I think a lot of these leader writers are tapping into this unsavoury, you know, nationalistic populist thing that we've been talking about.
Are they just trying to get new readers? Are they just trying to get more shares and increase their audience?
I mean, these guys, these are smart guys. They're not. I mean, it's all to get clicks.
The Daily Telegraph getting Nigel Farage to write a front page op-ed is quite controversial.
Or not? Well, controversial is a polite way of putting it. I can think of several other words I would have used myself. It is even by the standards of Britain's sort of somewhat excitable tabloids and middle market newspapers, it is an extraordinary performance today. They're collector's items, all three of these, the Sun, the Mail and the Express in particular. We shall move on from that, however, to slightly happier media news, because finally tonight, while the world probably didn't need another reminder that weird and unlikely things can happen as it looks forward to Tuesday, it is impossible to begrudge the north side of Chicago its joy as the Cubs overcame a 108-year-old curse to bring the Commissioner's Trophy home to Wrigley Field. The aftermath has also been gratifying for those of us who believe in proper print photography. Proper print photography. Who writes this? And also enjoy saying I told you so, because the Chicago Tribune's front page was a wonderful picture by staff photographer Brian Casella, a tableau of joy which will adorn the iconography of the city and the sport forever. At the Chicago Sun-Times, which fired all its photographers in 2013, they used a nondescript wire server shot and their cover looks terrible. Here at Monocle, of course, we're very keen on photography as a thing in print. Tom, we're absolutely right about this, aren't we?
100%. I mean, I love my sport. I actually love my baseball, Andrew, and there's so many heroes in this story, but maybe I shouldn't go into
that. I can't tell if you're lying or if you're telling the truth.
No, I think one of the noteworthy things is that...
Tell me something about baseball, Tom.
So Theo Epstein, the GM of the Cubs, was also the GM of the Boston Red Sox when they ended their 85-year curse of the Bambino back in 2004, Danny.
Okay, you passed the test.
I think he deserves a special mention. Plus, he sprayed champagne in Bill Murray's face, but that's for another day. Yeah, this is a great story. Lo and behold, if you get rid of all your proper journalists, snappers, whatever they are, I used to work in newspapers, I know what a fine art sports photography is in particular.
Indeed so.
You end up with a really rubbish product. People's heads cut off, you can't see what's going on, you don't capture the magic, the narrative of the story. If you have proper people on your payroll who are trained, they know what they're doing, you get a really good product. Whoever would have thought it?
And you also get not just proper people who are trained, but you can afford people who are genuinely talented. I mean, I have on assignment for other journals, not this one, obviously, occasionally been asked if I don't mind whipping out my iPhone and taking a few snaps while I'm there, to which I've always replied no, because I know lots of people who are photographers who would never speak to me again, and two more to the point, I'm terrible. I suck. I'm a rotten photographer. That's why I don't do it for a living.
I mean, my uncle is a hockey photographer, and he works for one of the big, not for a newspaper, essentially. But the thing here is actually the wire photograph. I don't know if it was Reuters or whoever took it. I mean, it wasn't some guy with an iPhone. I mean, it's a nice photograph.
No, true enough.
It's just not a staff member. And I don't know actually if the Sun-Times has a photo editor, but that's probably one of the more important things. I mean, having an editor who could say, right, this doesn't really look good. Even if you do source it from the wires, it's like, this doesn't really
look good. That is a fair point, because the Tribune shot is wonderful. It's a great front page. It captures the moment absolutely perfectly. And in that particular instance, it will repay the investment. One would think that will adorn T-shirts, coffee mugs, calendars, possibly for the next 108 years, if it takes the Cubs that long to win another pennant. I mean, Liam, is there a future, do we think, or do we just hope for photography in print and online?
There's definitely a future. I think going back to that particular paper that fired all of its photographers, maybe they could do a merger with the iPhone, and their whole advertising campaign is beautiful photos taken with the iPhone. Maybe they could actually make some money out of all their shots and get people to take photos in the audience and publish the really good ones.
I mean, I guess
that's the future.
I guess finally to return to where we sort of came in. I mean, you do have to kind of put the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series alongside Leicester City winning the Premier League, the Western Bulldogs winning the AFL, the Cronulla Sharks winning the NRL. You go back to Princess of Penzance, or was it Prince of Penzance, winning the Melbourne Cup last year at 100-1. If we're looking at omens as we look ahead to something else bizarre happening on Tuesday, are we getting discouraged?
Depends who your candidate is.
You're being very gnomic about this.
I don't know.
I'm still starting to wonder.
I don't think it has a direct correlation, much as it would please, I'm sure, certain followers of certain sports franchises to think so. I think this is going to be decided by the US electorate, and I'm sure they're going to do the right thing.
Are you going to be at work on Wednesday? Are you going to be here to eat your hat radio?
I'm here bright and early. I'll be in at 4 a.m. to
chart the latest. Will you take me into your house to live if I have to claim political asylum in this country?
Danny, my door will never be open.
Do you have a spare bedroom?
Come join me on Lanzarote. I'll have a space for you.
Okay.
the People's Republic of, what are you going to call it, Aldersonia?
Trump land.
Alderstan.
Alderstan.
Yeah. The benevolent dictator, Liam Aldis.
That is all we have time for on today's Midori House. Thank you to Tom Edwards, Daniel Giacopelli, and Liam Aldis, President for Life of Aldersan. Today's show was produced by Ben Ryland, researched by Fernando Augusta Pacheco and Judith Serra. Our studio manager was Toby Hammond. Stay tuned for The Menu at 1900, followed by The Cinema Show at 2000, and The Daily wraps up the week. Could go either way. At 2200, Midori House returns on Monday, 1800 London time. For now, I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and goodbye.